This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3825, for Friday, the 31st of March, 2023. Today's show is entitled, Creating a Natural Aquarium. It is hosted by Minix, and is about 39 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, setting up your first natural self-sustaining freshwater aquarium.
Hello, this is Minix, and I thought I'd give a little overview of how to go about creating a natural aquarium. I call it natural because you're not really building an aquarium so much as you are creating a self-sustaining ecosystem. So you're emulating what's already existing in nature, just in a glass box in your own home. About me and aquariums, I've probably been doing this for about 25 years now. But I didn't get into the natural side of aquariums until, say, 2015 or 2016. So maybe 6 or 7 years. And I really wish I had done this from the beginning. I started out like most people do, with just a regular rimmed aquarium with candy-colored pebbles in the bottom and, you know, the plastic plants and the little castles and some guppies or mollies and a little pleco and you know, just did my best to keep everything alive. And I did that for many years. I kind of graduated to pebbles in the bottom, like stones, and then more elaborate decorations and things like that. But basically, it was the same concept. Everything was pretty much artificial. Every once in a while, my fish would get sick, and I'd have to put the sick fish in quarantine so it wouldn't spread out through the rest of the tank. And then I'd do water changes once a week or every 2 weeks, and so basically it was just a box to watch fish swim around. Not much else going on in there. But about 6 or 7 years ago, I started this method of natural aquariums, where I worked on creating something that would be more self-sustaining and fish would not get sick. The aquarium itself would kind of regulate itself. It would be balanced, and I wouldn't have to do water changes anymore. And just a lot of positives compared to how it had been doing it. So I'll just preface this by saying that if you're going to get into this whole natural aquarium type of hobby, it takes a lot of patience, and there's no really quick fix to anything. If you just want to get up and started right away, this probably isn't for you. But if you are into a challenge and something that's really pretty to look at and something that's kind of holistic in your approach to it, where everything works together, and you may be interested in this. The best way to start is with the aquarium itself. If you're new to aquarium and fish in general, I suggest a larger aquarium if you have room for it, at least a 20-gallon. This is because the bigger the aquarium, if something goes wrong, say there's a big nitrate spike or ammonia gets out of hand or something like that, usually it's easier to catch it before it crashes your tank, just because you have more water volume to work with. And as you test the water, you can kind of see a slower rise in bad pollutants, where if you have a smaller tank, a 10 or 8 or 5 gallon tank, If something gets out of hand, it does it really quickly. And there's a big chance that your whole tank will crash and you'll have to start over. So if you can, and you're just getting started, I suggest a 20-gallon. If you don't have room for it, you can do a 15 or a 10-gallon. I wouldn't go below that if you're new to the hobby, because unlike some things, the smaller it gets, the more difficult it can be as far as managing things, because water chemistry changes happen so quickly in smaller volumes of water that you can be frustrated and just decide to quit altogether. So aquariums themselves are just glass boxes. You can find good deals on them certain times of the year at places like PetSmart or Petco. They'll have the dollar a gallon sale, where you can get a nice 20 gallon for $20. And if you don't want to buy new, you can always buy used. Lots of places, Craigslist, Facebook Marketplace, places like that. People are getting rid of aquariums all the time. The only issue is make sure you have a chance to test the aquarium. In other words, fill it with water before you actually buy it, because sometimes older aquariums can leak. And if you're not used to resealing aquariums, then you may just be out your money. So if you have a chance to test it before buying it, if you buy used and it's not from a store, then I would recommend doing that. Otherwise, that's all you really need. There's lots of different kinds of aquariums, but if you're just getting started, I recommend not spending that much money, because you don't really know if you're going to like this hobby or not until you start to get into it and see if you have the patience for it. So say you've bought a 20-gallon aquarium. They have rimmed and rimless. Rimmed aquariums are your standard aquariums you see with just a black plastic rim on the top. Rimless don't have that. They usually have thicker glass to compensate and better sealing so that the walls of the aquarium don't fall apart. But they don't need that plastic rim. But usually they're more expensive too, just because of the quality of the glass. If you do buy a rimmed aquarium that has the plastic rim, be aware that any kind of filters you put on the aquarium or lights may not be able to fit it. Some will and some won't, they'll tell you. But if you have a filter or a light already you want to use, it's very easy to cut away the plastic rim and the spot that you want to put the light or the filter, just so it'll fit on the glass. And it's not really a big deal. But otherwise, just start with a basic aquarium. Next, you want to go to substrate, which is what you're going to put in the bottom of the aquarium. The easiest and cheapest way to do it, which I also think is probably the best way, is just to use regular organic potting soil. You can find this at any Lowe's or Home Depot, any hardware store or gardening center or anything like that. You want to make sure it's organic, because you don't want chemicals in there that are going to leach out into your aquarium and harm your fish or your livestock. And you can just get a small bag of that and then get some sand. Pull filter sand is what I like. It tends to have, sorry about that noise, my cat's going crazy. Pull filter sand has the grain size that I really like, and it's really cheap. You can buy a pretty big bag of it for pretty cheap. So what you want to do is put, say it's a standard 20-gallon aquarium, you put about an inch of the potting soil on first, and then on top of that you want to put 2 inches of sand. You want to keep your ratio about 2 to 1 for sand to soil, and that should give you a thick enough sand cap so that the soil, number one, doesn't leach out into your aquarium, and number two, it gives you a layer that becomes anoxic, which means it doesn't have any oxygen, which you want to cultivate a certain type of bacteria that helps to break down fish waste and fish food and mom and just general waste that settles to the bottom of the tank. The sand is good because even though it can create a cap to give you that anoxic environment at the bottom of your tank, it also is kind of shaped in a way that the waste that falls to the bottom of the tank or the food or whatever eventually settles through the sand into the soil. So it's not completely impermeable, but once you get deep enough into the soil, then it is. So the sand gives the waste time to break down and then settle between the grains and go into the soil and break down there via the bacteria. So you've got your soil and your sand. By the way, you can go with a gravel bottom if you want, but I recommend, if you're going to use gravel, to use a planted aquarium type of gravel. There's several kinds, and they're usually all volcanic in nature. And so usually they have tiny little micro holes, and they're somewhat porous. And what this does is gives surface area for bacteria to colonize, because most of your bacteria is going to be on surfaces when in your aquarium rather than in the water column itself. So if you decide to go the gravel route, make sure your layer of gravel is thick enough so that eventually when you get to the bottom of the gravel that you'll have that anoxic environment. But also make sure it's the volcanic type of gravel or volcanic soil, sometimes they call it. There's a few different brands. You can just look up a planted aquarium gravel or planted aquarium substrate and find those pretty easily at your pet store or on Amazon. But a cheaper and, in my mind, better way to go about it is just to do the soil and the sand. So that's your substrate. Once you get that in, you'll want to add your water. Now, this kind of depends on where you're located. Some smaller towns and cities have just chlorine in their water, which is not a big deal. You can just pour your water into a bucket and let it sit out a couple of days, and the chlorine evaporates. But a lot of larger cities have moved to chloramine instead of chlorine, which does not evaporate from water. So you need to add a dechlorinator, which is not a big deal. Usually like a cap or a half cap full to every 5 or 10 gallons. It'll tell you the directions on the bottle. And where I live, we have chloramine in our water. So I use the dechlorinator, and just with regular tap water, I don't add anything else to it. And it's almost instantaneous how fast the chlorine is eliminated from the water. So I always have like a 2.5 gallon to 5 gallon jug full of water that I've treated so I can top off the tank when needed. So to add the water to your tank, and if you have well water, you don't have to worry about any of this. Actually, well water is really nice for natural aquariums because of the carbonates, the TDS, is good for the plants. So they need those minerals and things like that. So I recommend putting some kind of bowl or a dish in your aquarium in the bottom on top of the sand before you pour the water in. And just pour the water on top of that, and that keeps you from penetrating the sand bed and having the soil leach out into your water. And just pour it slowly about 3/4 up to the top of the tank so that you still have room to put your hands in there and maneuver around and stuff. So that's the substrate that I would recommend for a natural aquarium. The third step would be to get you some plants. Large pet stores or fish specialty stores will have plants in stock, and you can talk to the shopkeeper or the employee about what kind of plants are good for a beginner. I recommend stuff like pearlweed or Urbicopa or Luigia, or some of those are the easier plants to grow when you're just starting out. You want to kind of stay away from the higher end plants that are like Monte Carlo, which is a carpeting plant, or baby tears. These tend to take CO2, which is more of a high tech type of tank where you infuse CO2 into the water, and you usually use an inline diffuser with a canister filter, and it's a lot more expensive. So if you're not sure if this is the hobby for you or not, I recommend kind of going low tech with just the easy to grow plants. And they're pretty easy to plant into the sand once you get the hang of it. The easiest way is you just use a long pair of tweezers and grab the bottom of the stem and just kind of push it into the sand. But you don't want to go all the way into the soil, just into the sand, and the roots will eventually find the soil by themselves. You just don't want to risk piercing that sand cap you got on top. So that's one way you can do it. Another way is if you happen to live by a river or a creek or a nice pond, you can find plants there as well. And the thing about natural aquariums is they are made up of a very diverse ecosystem. So there's all kinds of bacteria you want in there. There's all kinds of microfauna, which is like arthropods and scuds and just tiny little water bugs and things like that. This is going to be part of your cleanup crew. So there's no harm in getting plants from ponds or creeks or things like that, if you're lucky enough to have those sources close to you, and just putting them in your tank. Now, they may grow and they may not. If they don't grow, that's fine. You just pull them out. But if you don't have those sources, there's nothing wrong from getting them from a pet store or an aquarium store like that. And just you want to really fill up your tank with plants. Early on, you may have issues with algae, and the more plants you have in your tank, the more competition there is for algae. So algae will grow in the beginning, especially before the plants get established, before they root and actually start taking in nutrients, just because you don't have any competition for the algae. So the more plants you can fit into tank, the better, and the better it's going to oxygenate your water and things like that. So once you got your plants in the tank, you just arrange them how you like. I like to group plants together that are the same species. It just looks a little nicer, and it kind of gives your fish different environments to go to or towards once they're in the tank. But you can do it however you want, however looks nice to you. They also have floating plants, which are nice, that just float along the top, and they take nutrients out of the water too and keep your water clean. Some of those are like a frog bit or red root floaters. One thing I would recommend probably staying away from is duckweed, which is a really good plant as far as growing fast and reproducing, but if you don't like the look of the tiny little leaves, it can be really hard to get rid of. So if you're absolutely sure that you want duckweed, go ahead and get it. Look at some pictures on the internet if you like that look. I just know that you'll be pulling out handfuls of it as your tank progresses quite often, because it grows really fast. And it can shade out the rest of your plants, too, to keep the light from reaching your plants. So once you got your plants in there, you got your water, you got your substrate. One thing I like to do to get the tank started, even if you didn't get your plants from a pond or a river, is to go to a natural body of water and just kind of reach your hand in there and get some old leaves and a little bit of mud and put them in a container and bring them back to your place and just put it in your tank. And this gives you a head start on giving you the type of bacteria and biofilm and things like that, and microfauna, like the little insects and water bugs, that you need in your tank to complete the ecosystem. This will be part of your cleanup crew and part of your biofilter. So the way we'll be doing the tank is we'll be creating as diverse and as large a biofilter as we can. What your biofilter consists of is mainly bacteria that converts things like waste matter and old food and things like that into the building blocks that your plants need, like the nitrates and things like that. Like your plants are not going to grow well unless they have the nutrients they need. And the bacteria is what converts these waste products into nutrients for your plants. So that's going to give you a head start as far as getting a diverse colony of bacteria in there. What happens when you have a completely kind of sterile type of tank where you have just the plastic pebbles and you know, you're putting chemicals in it and stuff? A lot of times you'll have a monoculture of bacteria in there where just one type of bacteria takes over. And a lot of times it's not the kind of bacteria you want. And what happens is your fish get sick and you can't figure out why. And usually it's because the bacteria you have in there is not the right kind to recycle nitrites into nitrates and things like that. So the more diverse colony of bacteria you can get into your tank, the better. So that's kind of the secret ingredient to building a natural tank is to seed it from a water source elsewhere by putting in some old leaves and things like that that the bacteria and the microfauna will be on already. So after you do that, I like to let my tanks cycle for a while. Some people say you don't need to cycle tanks. I find I have much better luck when I let the bacteria start to grow and colonize in the tank. And during this process, you may see a white cloud, which is the bacteria, which is fine. You don't have to do anything. It'll go away on its own. But you just let that bacteria begin to colonize your tank, you know, start coating surfaces. And you may see kind of a white film, and this is just biofilm, which is made of bacteria, start to collect on things like rocks and wood and whatever else you put in your tank. And that's fine because you need that. You need it to coat all the surfaces in your tank and to really do its job to act as a good biofilter. So the longer you can let that tank sit, the better before you actually put livestock in there. I like to let the tank sit at least a month. So like I said, it takes patience to do this right and to have a tank that will regenerate itself when it needs to, will heal itself when it needs to. It's almost self-sustaining after a while. So that's kind of how I would do it. I would just let it cycle. But while it cycles, you can go ahead and add a filter to your tank. My favorite kind is just a small sponge filter. These are very simple little devices. It's just usually a black or a green sponge around a little plastic pole, and it has a weight on the bottom, so it sits at the bottom of your tank. And within a little plastic tube, you insert an air line, and that connects to an air pump that you have outside your tank. And this is one of the oldest and simplest filters, but to me, it's still one of the best for natural tanks. Instead of the hang-on-the-back filters or the elaborate filters that have the cycling media in it and stuff like that. Just a regular old sponge filter is probably my favorite. It does what it needs to do. It collects detritus. As you pump air through it, it pulls air inside. As you pump air through it, it pulls water into the sponge itself, and that's how it actually filters the tank. But the best thing that I like about sponge filters is these sponges have a large surface area compared to their size. So all that good bacteria you have in your tank is able to colonize that sponge filter, and it has all this surface area in it that's full of, that will eventually fill with that good bacteria you want that acts as your biofilter. And sponge filters are probably about the cheapest you can buy too. You can find them anywhere, you know, small ones for just a few dollars. And air pump is pretty cheap too, between $5 and $10. You can buy an air pump at Walmart usually, if you don't want to spend pet store prices or whatever. But either way you go, that's kind of the type of filter I would recommend, would just be a small sponge filter. And just let that cycle in your tank as well while your whole tank is cycling. And then after about a month, the water should be nice and clear, and you should see no more sediment in the water and no more white clouds of bacteria. And go ahead and get a little water test kit. You can buy either the little test strips, which work fine, or you can get more of the complex sets that use the vials, and you add a reagent to the water, and then you compare the color against the chart. Either one's fine, but I find that just starting out, you probably won't want to spend too much money, and you can buy a little bottle of the test strips fairly cheaply, and they'll tell you on the side of the bottle exactly what the colors mean on the test strips and where you're at. So when you're ready for fish, you don't want any ammonia in the water. You don't want any nitrites in the water. You do want some nitrates. Nitrates is what's actually be feeding your plants, but it doesn't. You want to keep it between 10 to 20 ppm usually. And usually the colors on the test strip will give you that approximation. So you test your water, and if everything looks good, then you're ready for your fish and you're ready for your lights. Now, the lights are one of the few things I would say that you really don't want to scrimp on, because you want a really nice bright light, but you don't want it to be hot either. You don't want it to heat up the water. You want it to just be bright enough so that your plants will grow and they'll take in nutrients and they'll clean your water column and oxygenate the water for the livestock. There's so many different brands of water. I mean, so many different brands of lights now that you could just take your pick. But to get a good set of lights for a 20 gallon, expect to spend between $30 to $50 starting out with, and they can get much more expensive than that. So, but that's one thing I recommend actually spending money on, because it's going to pay off in the long run. A good light will last longer, and your plants will grow better. Now, while your tank is cycling, you don't need lights, or else you're just going to grow a bunch of algae. So, but in the meantime, you're not going to have any lights. It's just going to run on its own, and the bacteria is going to populate. But as soon as you put those plants in there, that's when you're going to want the lights to come on. So, so if you want to just cycle the tank for about a month with no lights, make sure you don't have any plants in there, because they're not going to grow. They're going to die without light. But anyway, so get you a good light or a set of lights, and then you're ready to go. You'll have your natural aquarium. Now, what you want to look for before you put your fish in, you want to make sure you have you tested your water, and you want to look at the sand carefully and see that your microfauna has already been breeding the little tiny bugs and things like that, because that's going to be part of your cleanup crew. That along with snails usually, and maybe a little bit of algae. Don't get freaked out by algae. Some people do. As long as it's not overtaking your tank, it's okay. Algae is also a part of your ecosystem. So as long as it's not covering your plant leaves to the point where they can't get light, you're okay. Algae, I've always looked at algae and snails as well as kind of the canary in the coal mine, which is kind of an indicator of how your tank is doing. People get freaked out when they see snails in their tank because they say they're ugly and things like that. But snails in your tank are good. That's part of your cleanup crew as well. The snails and the little microfauna and the bacteria, they all eat the dead food and the fish poop and the wasted food and things like that. And they're able to process it for the bacteria, which processes it further and gives food for your plants. So that's kind of what you want to look for, is make sure your microfauna is populated, make sure your plants are looking nice and healthy, and once that's done, your water looks good, you can put your fish in. Now, as far as fish goes, that would be a whole nother episode, because there's so much that goes into it. Pick fish that you think you would like to see, because this is not just an ecosystem, but it's something, it's a decoration. It's something that you want to take joy in just watching and kind of show off to people. So I like the little small nano fish like Rasboras or Daniels or things like that. But you could add any type of fish you wanted, as long as you know what it takes to take care of the fish. I have a few specialty fish that take a little more care and usually some of them even take live food and things like that. But usually you can't go wrong with some rasboras or things like that. Guppies and mollies are okay. They tend to be a little dirtier, and they tend to poop a lot more. And so I like to go with some of the smaller fish when it comes to first starting a tank. I usually recommend really small fish to people that are just getting started. And also because these small fish can usually snack on the microfauna that you've already got started in your tank. So that's pretty much it. I would just put a recommendation out there that if you're not a patient person, this is probably not the hobby for you, because this a good self-sustaining tank to get to that point to where it's just cruising along and you don't really need to do much else as far as besides just trimming the plants when they get too tall or things like that usually takes anywhere between 4 to 6 months, sometimes longer. After a year, your tank should definitely be stable enough, if you're doing everything right, to kind of be self-sustaining. And by that point, the water should always be nice and clean. Your nitrates should be pretty minimal, and you won't have to do water changes anymore because the tank kind of takes care of itself. You have your own self-contained little environment, natural environment, ecosystem going there, and all you'll have to do is just top it off. I never do water changes anymore. Now I have saltwater tanks that I have to do water changes, but that's just to add in, you know, all the minerals and stuff that the coral need. But as far as freshwater goes, you really shouldn't have to supplement anything, and you shouldn't have to do any water changes once your tank is cruising along. Now, in the beginning, you may want to do a few water changes just to clear it up a little bit and to get your parameters where they need to be. But after a while, when your plants are growing and they're purling really well, which means they're producing oxygen, they produce these little pearl-like bubbles on them, then there's not much else you have to do, which is why one of the big advantages of these natural type of aquariums is that they are pretty much self-sustaining other than feeding the fish and topping off the water. Usually if you have enough snails and a cleanup crew, you don't even have to clean the glass. They kind of take care of that as well. So snails and algae are not really anything to worry about unless they get out of hand. When you start to see a lot of snails, you know that you're overfeeding your fish. A good rule of thumb with fish is just feed them what they need, not what they want, because fish are always hungry. They'll just keep eating and eating and eating, even though they don't need to. You only want to feed them enough to stay healthy. And as long as your fish are swimming around and they're not laying on the bottom and they're pretty active, then they're plenty healthy. I feed my fish, non-specialty fish, maybe twice a week, sometimes a third time on the weekend, but not often, and very little food, just enough that they can eat in one session. I have a tank with some chili rasboras in it, which are these tiny red nanofish, and I just put a tiny pinch of food on the top of the water, and as it sinks into the water column, they snack it all up, and it's usually gone by the time it hits the bottom, before it even has time to hit the bottom. And that's kind of what you want to look for when you're feeding your fish. So if you're feeding properly, you shouldn't have an issue with snails. If you see a lot of snails, you know you're overfeeding. If you have a lot of algae, it could be a few things that could be overfeeding as well. It could be not having enough plants in your tank, because the plants provide competition for the algae and usually keep the algae at bay. Or it could be that your lights are on too long. I usually keep my lights on between 8 to 10 hours, depending on how the tank's doing. If the tank is susceptible to algae, I'll shorten the lighting period to maybe 6.5-7 hours. But once your plants are really booming and growing well, you can crank that light up, and they should keep the algae at bay. It should be enough competition to keep the algae at bay. I have a little 6-gallon that I keep the light on for about 10 hours, and those plants go crazy, and they love it, and I don't have any algae problems at all. So look for algae and snails to be your friends and not to be something you're constantly battling, because those are really good to have in your tank. And also they provide a natural barrier against your tank crashing. If all of a sudden something goes wrong, maybe a fish died that you didn't see, and now you got this big ammonia spike in your tank, and instead of your tank just crashing, the algae will actually start to bloom, but it absorbs all that ammonia that comes from the dead fish, and it keeps your whole tank from crashing. Snails as well. Snails, if you're overfeeding, they'll eat the food, and they'll keep the ammonia from rising in the tank, and it's kind of a natural way to keep your tank in check. So what you're really creating here is a whole ecosystem that works together. Remember, you've got all these variables. You've got your water, you've got the substrate that's doing its job with the bacteria, you have your little microfauna that are breaking down food, leftover food and fish poop and all that. You got to remember, when you feed your fish, that food gets eaten 7, 8, 9, 10 times before it actually gets to your plants, because your fish eat the food, and then they poop it out, and then the snails eat the food, and maybe if you have some small algae eaters like Otocinclus or some of those, they will eat the poop as well. And all these critters in your tank, the microfauna will eat it, and that food gets eaten several times before it even makes its way to the plants. And they get every little bit of protein and things like that out of the food, which is good for your tank, because you don't want that stuff sitting around in there. So the larger and more diverse cleanup crew is what I call them, of snails and microfauna and bacteria you can build up in your tank, you're going to have a lot easier time with it, and you're going to have a lot less frustration. So remember that this type of aquaculture, or this type of aquarium is meant to be very diverse. It's going to be a little dirty. It's not going to be clean and sterile like what you would see in a doctor's office, but it's going to be a lot healthier too. You're not going to notice your fish getting sick like they would in a sterile plastic environment, because they have what they need to stay healthy and survive. And they have plenty of oxygen from the plants. They don't have pollutants in the water from rotting food and things like that, and they got what they need to have a nice slime coat on their bodies and things like that. So there's some definite benefits to this way of keeping an aquarium, you know. And there's some negatives too, like it's a lot harder to keep it balanced in the beginning, because you're constantly checking things, and maybe you're not feeding enough, maybe you're feeding too much, or all kinds of variables. But that's what those test strips are for. Those kind of tells you, and also, you know, just watch what's going on in your tank, and after a while, you'll find it just kind of cruises along on its own, and you don't really need to do much, and it becomes a lot more enjoyable. So think about it. Think about starting a natural aquarium, and if you're into gardening, or if you're into environmentalism, maybe this would be a nice little hobby for you, because you get to really see how this kind of ecology evolves over time and works together, and everything kind of comes together the way it should, just like it does in nature. So hopefully this will give you kind of a spark of interest, maybe to try this on your own. I'd really like to hear from people that do this, or if you're just getting started, feel free to ask me questions or get in contact with me. I am Minix, and I am usually on the Linux Lugcast the first and third Fridays of the month. You can go to thelinuxlugcast.com, and you can find out how to join the show if you like. We'd love to have people come on and join the show. If you just want to ask me questions, you can find me on Mastodon. I'm at Minix, M-I-N-N-I-X, at upallnight.minix.dev. And I post pictures of my aquariums and sometimes of my cat and things like that, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about this hobby. I've been doing it for a little while now, and I really enjoy it, and I really enjoy helping people too. So anyway, that's it for now, and I hope to see you on the other side. Good night.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org.
Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.